Hello and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 205. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I, of course, am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I'm joined once again by my good friend, Stephen McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Linux Maven, or better known as the Dork Dork Geek. How's it going, Dork?
Crazy. I'm not going to say good, but I will say crazy. I'll say I'm also technically disappointed. And that's because Kansas Linux Fest people scheduled their conference on Mother's Day weekend. So I'm not going to that conference anymore. Never mind. Sorry. I'm pretty sure I like being married. I like the fact that my wife doesn't stab me in the neck when I'm asleep. So I'm not going to that conference.
I'm not going to be making it either. That is a bit unfortunate. Hopefully it was an oversight and not something intentional. We came across that today. We're trying to perhaps scramble, get another get together in the first half of this year going, and it's not looking good.
Well, I'll say, A, there's always OLF, but B, the world is the limit. I am basically pinging everyone, and because I really do have a goal of trying to go to 4 conferences a year. It'll be nice. So I'm just pinging other people, see if they know of any other events happening. And our good friend Aaron said, there's a great Maker Fest happening in Austin, Texas here where, two guys we know could actually drive there. So maybe that'd be a good conference to go to. It sounds really cool. You know, I'm not a technical fan of what I'm hearing about the political nature of Austin, a.k.a. any city one way or the other. Give me a city in the middle. So it didn't sound like a great city per se. And then I go look at the conference and it's on Mother's Day. So 2 conferences are completely incompetent or hate their mothers and don't have wives and are living in the basement of their dad's house is what I'm guessing. I don't know.
First of all, don't hate on Austin until you have the barbecue. Okay. Regardless I know exactly where you're going with this.
No, I can't have it now because I'm diabetic. So next.
Oh yeah. I don't have a follow up to that part.
Of course not. That's the big stopper. Yeah, like about 2 weeks ago, I was diagnosed, quote unquote. I'm pretty sure if I have a technical term, it's a pre-diabetic. We don't know anything about if I'm diabetes 1, diabetes 2. One test came back with 256 blood sugar level. Since then, I've literally eaten like 2 grams of sugar each day about, and maybe 40 to 50 grams of carbohydrates every day, trying to, not have to be on shots.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I can't blame Lennox for my indulgence of soda and ice cream.
Maybe we could blame Pizzeria Regina.
Well, it did have dough on it, so it did. Yeah, but I would more blame Agave Maria or whatever.
Yes. Did we talk about Agave Maria in the last show?
I'm not sure we mentioned it out of fear of being struck by lightning.
Okay, so I gotta lay this out there for people. So for those of you who are tequila fans and fans of beer, there is a beer called Agave Maria. It actually has agave nectar in it. It's an ale. I believe it's an American ale. It was a strong American ale with agave nectar in it, and it was aged in tequila barrels. Now, when I read this on the menu, I thought, I don't know. But whenever I'm in Mead Hall, I just start ordering samples, and they bring them to me because it's a good establishment. And I think I ordered 3 or 4 samples at once, and the Agave Maria was the sample I had tried last out of the 4, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be a problem, because it was so damn good. So, yeah, I drank, I want to say, at least 6 pints of that over the following 30 hours, or, 18 hours, and then second to last day there, they ran out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say it was amongst the most expensive drafts on their menu. And then after drinking one, I said, can I have another?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just like, yeah, just put it on my tab. Let's go. Buckle in.
Yeah. Good stuff. So I'm looking for other conferences. I'm 99.99999% sure I'm going to OLF. Not sure if I'm going to, give a talk or not. I did give a talk last year. That was the mini PC talk where I gave away hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise. And I'm still feeling the effects from, just to let everyone know. So, you know, I'm like still putting bandages over those wounds, you know.
And by that, he means he now has extra room in his office for more stuff that he's bought since he gave the other stuff away.
Yeah, I mean, I still have some other stuff sitting around that's really cool, but nothing to the scope of what I had before.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's all about rebuilding, right?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and I have, like, this is a it's like a game kit from the CHIP chip people, which is actually pretty cool. It has like a
very neat.
has a Super Nintendo controller in here. That's the L and R are little.
Is that an iBuffalo controller?
No, this is something they had basically branded for them.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So it technically works.
Yeah.
You know, not great, but it works.
Huh.
Well, as long as it ain't Mad Cats, I guess we're okay.
Oh, too soon, my friend. Too soon.
Yeah. Well, they're now gone from the land. I will say I have done more than a couple Linux things. One of the things, and I'm going to do is, it is the first link in the notes. Well, before we get to the first link in the notes, this show is brought to you by me and Cody.
Yep. You're welcome.
And the Podnuts, and the Podnuts community in general. If you like these kinds of shows, we're not going to put you through 3-minute ad rolls where we constantly drone on about things that we actually don't use or like. Unlike a large amount of shows out there, but I'm sure there are plenty of shows out there also where they really are passionate about their ad sponsors. I'm really passionate about the positive nature of the huge majority of the Podnuts people out there. I've had multiple people tell me that I've actually had multiple people now contact me in the last couple of weeks asking me if I can sit with them, talk with them about how to build a community, how to build up a podcast, what's the proper way to do SEO and all these other kinds of things, because they witness the Podnuts people and they're like, I can't believe how positive they are. I can't believe how nice they are. I've not met places like this before on the internet. And it's because of you guys going to places like podnuts.com/Amazon that enable us to basically control our own destiny, mm-hmm. control our own fate, and really only have really nice people help out in the community, help spread the word and interact with each other and help teach each other about all kinds of stuff, of the least, not to mention Linux, period. ThinkPenguin.com is a great website if you want to focus on your own privacy, your own rights, and still have computers in your house. If you need a coupon code for them, don't hesitate. Shoot me an email. I have plenty of coupon codes. And if I ever run out, I was told just ask for more and I will get more. So I encourage people to support them. We all have to make our own votes and we vote with our money. So if you're okay with companies lobbying our government and being able to sell our information away and putting you as only a consumer and not a benefit to the company, then don't shop at Think Penguin. But if you prize your own personal rights and freedoms, I heavily encourage you to at least check them out.
Yeah, really good company. Good outlook on technology and helping people in the community and those people that would want to have a very specific experience, I'll say. So if you haven't yet, or if you haven't in a while, I would urge you just go take a look at what they do have for sale. Even though they have a recently reduced catalog of items, there's still a lot of good quality stuff there. So I would urge you to at least check it out. Maybe some of the stuff there wouldn't fit your needs, but much like we were speaking to earlier with community, with your personal community or people you interact with online, if there happens to be a need for a product that they do sell, that comes up that you're aware of someone that you know, then you can refer them to Think Penguin as well and then help not only benefit them, but help spread the word.
Absolutely. And literally don't forget, if tomorrow there's a apocalypse, you're going to need people like Hacker Bob in order to stay alive.
I know I could put my PowerBook G3 in front of Hacker Bob and just say, hey man, go get it done. And he would.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I definitely encourage you guys to help the people out. I will say one of the things that I think are causing other content providers to slow down, refocus, or just say bye, is the fact that I think in our modern computing environment, there is such a ridiculously huge percentage of people that don't need full desktops. And what I mean by that is Chromebooks are selling like obsessively well. I think that this was the first time they went a full year and actually outsold Apple MacBooks.
That's correct.
Which I will say is not as impressive as it could have been just because of the state of the MacBook and how in the last 3 years they've not really done what they've done in the past, is what I'll say. So Chromebooks are killing it in every shape, way, or form. Then you have Android on like the top 500 whatever websites doing stats on their desk, on their visitors. Android is now officially, quote unquote, the number one browser on the internet, browsing computer on the internet, and not Windows computers. There's more Android devices connecting to these servers than Windows devices, period. That is also insane.
Sorry. Just to clear that up, we don't mean Android versus Windows phone. We mean Android versus any Windows computer.
Yeah, just computers. So everything taken into considerations, iPhone OSs, Android OSs, Windows OSs, Mac OS X, whatever,
OS 10.
OSs, yeah. BSDs, all of them, if you look at them all in total, the number one largest number is now Android devices. So I think a lot of people, huge number of people, are only using stuff like the desktop browser. And that's honest. To be honest, the one place I am seeing at least some innovation. To me, desktop apps are doing stuff, but they're not doing it close to the rate they were 2 to 3 years ago. PC gaming is still fine. And by PC, I mean x86, x64 processor gaming. It's still doing fine. Linux gaming is definitely getting better. But the numbers are browsers. And Vivaldi is a browser, I believe. Oh man, Cody, we brought to this show, my sense of timing is almost as bad as my eyesight. Don't be shocked if I'm way off when I say this, but I believe it was about a year ago we first brought Vivaldi to the podcast. A couple months later, they did an interview with the lead dev on Tilts. Really smart guy. But I was spurred again to go try this browser out again. It is unbelievably, okay, this is so gimmicky, Cody, I can't help it. If there was a handcrafted, locally sourced, organically grown.
Single batch. BPA free.
BPA free, MSG free, gluten free browser in the world. This thing is really sexy, is what I want to say. Vivaldi browser has gotten much more full featured. The last time I used it, they had a note feature, an email feature, all these features in the browser that were not yet enabled and you couldn't use. One of the newest features that they just enabled is a incredibly detailed and analytical statistical way to look at your browsing history. This alone has enough lines and colors to keep someone under my ADHD condition extremely satisfied in just clicking around and seeing what kind of information I can, you know, get out of it. So I did install it again on my upboard computer, which is basically a Raspberry Pi size computer, but it's an x86 processor running an Intel Atom processor with 4 gigs of RAM, I believe. I always used to have installed Chrome and Firefox. And it was really just in case one broke, I had the other. Well, now I don't have either one of them installed on most of my computers. I either have Brave, which is striving to be a ad-free browser. There is some kind of back support mechanism you can do. Or Vivaldi are the two browsers I'm using back and forth, and I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
See, I haven't heard about Brave. That's interesting. I will, but yeah, I remember very briefly playing with Vivaldi when it was either shortly before or shortly after we mentioned it on the show. And it wasn't that I didn't like it. It was just one of those things that kind of fell by the wayside. And as a matter of fact, now that I'm remembering, I think I installed it on a machine right before I distro hopped something else, and I just didn't reinstall it. So going back and checking this out again, I think would definitely benefit me.
Yeah, it is really cool. Brave also has an Android version that is almost indistinguishable from Chrome until you hit the Brave icon. Which is, to me, one of the best features you can say about a mobile browser is it acts just like what you're probably already used to. Vivaldi is, I'm going to say, at least constantly innovating and constantly putting out new versions. They're, you know, this is definitely, they're not settling, they're not slowing down. I believe I got literally like 2 updates in 1 week. And the browser seems snappy. It seems fast. Works pretty solidly. No real issues. I did have to go back and tweak some default options that I just didn't think were great for me. Like the control tab order was set to whatever you had tab you had focus on last. So if you had 5 tabs, you had, and if you were on the 3rd tab, and then you manually clicked the 5 tab, then if you control tabbed through, you would go back to the 3 tab. To me, it was a little bit weird. But it was just those kinds of tweaks. I had to do 1 or 2 tweaks, and then I'm fine. I'm rolling like nothing is different, and it's the same browser I always used. Had no compatibility issues with any sites that I tried to use, and just works great.
Well, that testimonial is enough for me. I'm going to install it when we get off the show.
Very cool. And for those audio listeners, V-I-V-A-L-D-I, Vivaldi, Vivaldi.
Once again, Dor doesn't give himself enough credit for correctly pronouncing something. Yes, you're correct, Dor.
Well, the only reason is because I've heard so many other people by now on so many other shows mention it.
Oh, okay.
Or else there's no telling what it could have been called. This next one, I think, is more along the lines of someone who's striving to be an administrator or an administrator wanting to show a youngling, a trainee, a junior on how to do the basics of how to do some sysadmin type thing. And one of the things I know is huge in enterprise and even some small businesses, even if you use stuff like WatchGuard routers and stuff, all these things are firewalls. And firewalling is a very difficult target for any company or any tech to get completely nailed down. And the main reason is because it constantly changes. Threats changes. You either whitelist stuff or you blacklist stuff, which means you either stop everything from getting through and only whitelist things that can get through your firewall, or you have the firewall completely opened up and then you blacklist, you turn off things that can't get through. No matter how you do it, you're never done, which is good for job security, but you are literally never done. And a lot of these systems, especially on Linux BSD, use what's called an IP tables backend. This is like how all backups seem to use rsync on the back end. They put their little pretty GUI interfaces on the front to try to woo people over and give them really easy optional things they can click and drag and highlight and select, but it's just rsync on the back end. Firewalls use IP tables on the back end, and most of these systems, technically speaking, if you really know what you're doing, you can access via the command line and do all the rule changes and rule updates you want. Well, if you're brand new to this, you might need a GUI on this task. And there's one here called Firewall Builder on Linux.com. They have a little article. It's called FW Builder. And it says it's a unique graphical firewall tool that allows the user to create objects and then drag and drop those objects into firewalls. So it's a definitely like, you know, what you see, what you get type of interface where you can very easily create. I'm going to use catchphrases like dynamic rules. You can really set filters on your firewall that otherwise would be very complicated to even imagine, much less create. I did ask two people I know that were firewall people if they heard of this. Both of them said no. One of them had a chance to look at it and said it did take a couple of seconds to really grasp what was going on. But once they got it, they thought this is really easy. When we want to make, to him, it was like to validate what I know and what I do kind of thing. And he said it was really good for the junior tech. So he was going to keep it in his toolbox.
Yeah, it definitely looks interesting. I mean, especially with people that want to learn this stuff. I know that we were talking with who earlier? Oh, my gosh. Oh, Martin. Yeah. Yeah, Martin Rambo Bando. Yeah, he had to take the knife out of his teeth just to talk to us on Voxer earlier. But, yeah, he's playing around with some firewall stuff at home, including some specific firewall hardware. So being able to dig into a tool like this, and I briefly read this article earlier. Definitely looks like something I'll want to kind of dip my toe in, but it might be a little further down the line for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing I really would love to get into, but it's the kind of thing, you know, if my brain is a chessboard, there's only so many pieces I can keep track of before I start losing track of things. Networking is one of the things that I am incredibly incompetent on. I literally just know enough to jump from computer to computer on my network and basics like that. I understand IP. I understand DNS. I hate DNS inside of enterprises because when that breaks, everything goes to hell in the handbasket. I understand DHCP, but when it comes to the very touchy security focused aspect of a firewall, that's when I get a little shaky on having confidence in. So every time I need a change on the corporate firewall, I literally turn to my one friend and buy him lunch and say, "Excuse me, sir, is there any way you could help me with this rule?" kind of thing. But yeah, and honestly, if we were running a Linux solution, I'm pretty sure I could, on a test machine, load this tool, figure out how to build the rule, and export the text for it and just send it to him for validation and for implementation, and it would work. But without a tool like this, no confidence whatsoever. It would
be a little difficult.
Just a shade, I'll say that.
A hair smidge.
Yeah, and I will say really quick, Linux.com, it seems to have changed in the last couple months. I'm not sure when it happened. They're having much better detailed articles written up. So I really do highly encourage people, if you think you know what's on Linux.com, go check it out again. Like this one has a very good examples of what kind of rule you want to make. And then it basically leads you step by step through a little bit of the process of, you know, first getting up and running on this tool, which I think is really cool. Oh, and this article is literally from 2011. I don't know how it hit my streams and feeds this past couple weeks, but it did. But this article is literally from 2011. So apparently they've been doing this kind of thing for a while. Or they used to. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that is interesting. Or maybe it was music got updated or something. So something changed and they just threw it up there.
Yeah, or somebody just found it and thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
I will say this next one really quick. Years ago, literally 5+ years ago, I remember mentioning a tool to... It was like, I used to relate it to like CC Cleaner on Linux, because there is no CC Cleaner on Linux, and it was called BleachBit, BLEACHBIT. And honestly, it's a pretty good tool. And then all of a sudden, I started seeing it on Windows. And when I ran it on Linux from time to time, I had people tell me when they checked all the boxes, because, you know, that's what you do when you clean your system, it would once in a while break stuff. So BleachBit expected you to be a true administrator and know what to click and what not to click. There, after that, they did start to get a little bit better about warning you about what you're clicking. But here was another one that I found that I just thought was gorgeous. I really hate to say it like this, Cody. It's so good looking, I thought it was using Flash on the back end.
Whoa, you watch your mouth.
I know, and I hate Flash. And like, there's a guy who makes a formatting tool for your mini computers or for your thumb drives, and I looked at it and I thought, man, this is a great looking tool, I'm gonna go download it. And then I look at it and it's this root that you have to have Flash installed. I literally emailed the dev and said, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you base something off of Flash on the desktop? I don't want to even install it on my computer. And a lot of people don't. I said, so you're literally losing a certain number of people just because you're using Flash. And the impression I got was, well, that's what I knew how to write it in, so I did.
Right. Yeah. You do run into some of that every once in a while. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Why was it done that way? Oh, that's the tool that I was trained in.
Right. That's the way I've always done
it.
Or something like
it was like that before we all got here.
Yeah. Because my chi told me to do it in that one. You know, or something like that. But I really do highly encourage people, if you're in any way looking at designing an application, and this is now, here's the tangent, really. The real reason I like this application is I literally brought it into work and showed some system devs alternate types of interfaces versus how we do interfaces at my job. I really do like the look and feel of this app. Even if I never click on System Cleaner and click Clean, I almost want this app installed just so once in a while I can launch it and remember what a good application is supposed to look like. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but I really do like this app and I really do think it works really good. And if I find out that what I installed actually went behind me and installed Flash, I'm going to be really upset.
Yeah, that could be a little hairy.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do an apt cache search here.
But I will say that not only is seeing something like this cool, because I'd never come across it before, but also it fills that need for the potentially the newer user, because it does definitely fit in with, I mean, especially with system cleaners and file cleaners being prevalent in the mobile OS space. This is just something else that you could potentially hand to a newer user that they might say, oh, I don't run antivirus. How do I, you know, maybe clean up my system, check for duplicate files, which I'm sure this does, you know, et cetera. Now this is another replacement or like offering that you can turn someone in that situation toward in order to fill that need for them. So I do like seeing this.
Yeah. Yeah, and for the new user, it gives them a good idea of possibilities, even.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because, like, everyone wants to know, where's device manager? How can I look at my hardware?
Right.
And I have had people ask me, I use CCleaner on my Windows computer. Well, don't I need to do this on mine?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I can at least give them an option. It's better than they ask me about defrag tools, you know? Yeah, and because here's the really, really unbelievably quick tangent. If you get to the point on Linux, on any Linux install, that you do need to defragment, you have too much crap on your hard drive, period. Once you go above 80-something percent, maybe 90%, Linux will uncommonly slow down because the way it throws files on the disk, it doesn't need fragmentation, but it also assumes you're not going to fill your damn drive up. So if you look at your drive and you see it's mostly filled, like almost 90% or more, get rid of files. You don't need to defragment, and you don't ever need to defragment a file on Linux, period. Now back to the app really quick. It also has a resource manager that honestly I think works better and looks better than the default task manager, system monitor, whatever it is I've seen in LXDE, KDE, GNOME, Unity, or I can't remember what there was another LXDE, I think it was, or XFCE. I like this resource manager a little bit better. It's just easier on my eyes. I don't have to go worry about theming it.
Yeah, I agree. It is very easy on the eyes. Yeah. And it also speaks to not only the design of the software is important, but you're going to increase the ease of use if someone can just sit down in front of it and use it without delving maybe too far into the settings or instructions. It should be something like this should be fairly simple to use. That's not to say there can be some advanced features under the hood, but we've all been there where we get a tool and you look at it, it just doesn't seem very intuitive, as if it was created by someone who wasn't really considering the end user, rather just what the piece of software is going to accomplish under an experienced user.
I'll definitely agree with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, there was something else I wanted to bring up, Cody. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I'm going to remember. One thing I don't know about here's where I'm going to, talk to the listener. snap packages. Okay. I know there's other things out there. I know Fedora has something, whatever. Oh, and one more time, whatever. Snap packages on at least Ubuntu. I need somebody to tell me if I'm mistaken or wrong. And if you have a good grasp of it, just if you could shoot us an email at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. The impression I'm getting is the intention, the goal, I'm not sure about implementation of snap packages, for instance, Cody, is it gives me the ability to say, I want to create this application. I'm going to compile it using this mechanic, and the output is going to be a snap file. And when I get that snap file, I can copy it to any Linux distribution at all that quote unquote supports snap packages, and it will install, AKA a universal install format. The reason I'm wanting to know about it more is I literally just found out Ubuntu 16.04, AKA the version I'm using, is already using snap. Anything I believe provided by Canonical themselves, Ubuntu themselves, is already in snap package format. So I've already installed snap packages and not even known it. So it makes me interested. And I know Fedora has theirs, and I'm sure it's fantastic. And I'm sure it works perfect. But I don't care about the Fedora version because I'm not a Red Hat. I'm a Red Hat advocate. I think it's great. I think it can only, you know, take over the world. That's how good it is. But I'm never going to install any Red Hat in my house under any circumstance. I'll sooner just use Android. But I do use Ubuntu. So that's my, that's what gets my attention. So if you know about snap, and if I'm wrong or if I'm right, can you please just shoot us an email? I'm actually trying to find an easier way to learn about that. Seems like not a lot of people are answering the questions that I'm asking.
Yeah, the way you explain it, I believe, is how it's intended to be, because we all know that there are some apps that are particularly difficult to install on particular distributions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the reason the old, hey man, this is gonna be almost insulting. The reason the old package delivery services like apt and aptitude and all these things and deb files work so well is because everything was utterly categorized and organized to where I was only downloading what I needed. Dependency resolution. With today's bandwidth, first world problems, with today's storage capacity, first world problems, we don't need to worry as much about only downloading that little bit of the app and then get everything else separately. Well, I believe snap packages do, for instance, the GIMP. You download GIMP on a Ubuntu Unity installation. I literally think it's like it's less than like 800K because all the dependencies are already there. Kind of thing, where if you download everything that's dependent on GIMP, it's literally something like a 200 meg download. So the snap package might be a 200 meg thing compressed, maybe a little bit smaller, but a bigger file. And that's what I'm expecting, but I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I haven't played with it whatsoever. So, in fact, I'm getting ready to install probably 16.04 on this newly acquired laptop that I have. Not a new laptop, but newly acquired. I can barely lift it with one hand, with my right hand. It's a 17-inch HP EliteBook. It's just a behemoth. I mean, you guys, I honestly think that this is the new king when it comes to beating a cougar to death with a laptop. I think that this thing would make a Lenovo ThinkPad probably quake in its boots. It's insane.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that like a shield you can get in Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild?
It's better. It's actually military grade. There was no testing done in a laboratory on those shields. This, however, can be dropped from, I think, a 3 to 4 foot drop upwards of 30 to 40 times before it even starts having issues. It's crazy.
I'll just say, the only word that comes to mind, coincidentally, is that laptop sounds like a beast. Oh, wait. It's the same kind of laptop that Rush the Winner, the Techie Geek owns.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
Accidental? Doubt it.
No way. Yeah, this thing is a total beast. I've never seen this much metal on a laptop before. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's just because I've been Fisher Price land when holding laptops lately, which is just nothing but plastic. It's quite sad.
Well, yeah, and my as of recent time preferred manufacturer, who isn't perfect because there's no perfect manufacturer, has been Lenovo, which I remember Steve C, former owner of Podnuts, I believe he used to make fun of them, literally saying they were like Fisher Price because of all the ports they had on them and because they were always plastic. Where yes, a metal laptop is a pleasant change of pace. I will not lie.
Said the liar.
No, I'm not a liar.
Fibber.
This laptop, I believe I use when I'm down here, I believe is well over a year and a half old. A couple months ago, I did get a multi-year, at minimum 5 or 6 year old ThinkPad, which is actually now my main device down here that I'm using to capture my audio and video on. I'm going to take a look at the ThinkPenguin laptops here and see if one of them are going to be my next one. Because I don't want to say I'm getting the itch, but I think it's been a little while since, now that I think about it, that since I've had an actual new from the factory laptop.
It's about 5 or 6 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, just because a lot of us are converting over to using our mobile device so much, and between that and using my Chromebook, which is now, it's officially dead. My Acer C710 is actually dead. It will not boot anymore. It's not a battery issue. I'm going to have a proper miniature tombstone made, and I'm going to bury it in my backyard. And then generations from now, when they uncover it, they'll know it was an important machine on humanity, or perhaps the downfall of humanity. Who knows? But it's going in the ground.
Well, to quote David Spade from Coneheads, it will be missed.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Hell of a guy.
But I have a new purchase in mind, which I'll speak about on a future show. Maybe not even this show.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, actually, it will fit in with this show for one specific use case, which I won't be able to create on it, but I'm sure that based on the parameters of this device, I will be able to one day install Linux on it, and that's enough for me.
My initial guess, which I don't want to respond to, a Surface, but I'm not going to go there. Oh, wait.
Oh, no.
Oh, a MacBook. That's it. You're like going to go the way of Nightwise and get a MacBook.
Oh, my. No. Okay. So, no, but you remember the first machine I installed Linux on, don't you?
I unfortunately do, yes.
Yeah. It was a MacBook. It was one of the 2005 white MacBooks, because it was literally the only machine that I had with an Intel processor at the time. I remember, I haven't told this story in a while, but it was Ubuntu, it might have been 7.10, or no, excuse me, it was either 8.04 or 8.10. It was still the brown, orange, yellow.
Right.
I remember I installed it on my lunch break at work, and it was probably the third night in a row, and I was working graveyard at the time. Finally got it installed after, some failed attempts. And I remember getting to the desktop and just feeling overjoyed. But then, of course, the Wi-Fi wasn't working.
Of course.
So, the mouse pointer was super laggy. There was issue X and Y and Z. But damn it, I installed Linux, and then it's been all downhill from there. I'll tell you what.
I understand. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Another kind of expanding point. I couldn't believe what I heard when Nightwise said he was dropping Linux.
Here's the thing. I stopped being a preacher of software years ago. Here's a good example I'll give you. Business. The only priority is money. The quicker you make it, the better off you are. The least you spend to get it, the better off you are. For instance, I could go buy $100 and change device. It can have 5 gigabit NICs, and it can be the most customizable firewall in existence. I can have remote administration. I can have a GUI interface. I can have it automatically backed up. I can have it do monitoring and notify me of new things on the network. And it can do all kinds of intrusion detection, and I mean, all kinds of stuff. Or I could buy WatchGuard routers. Or there's many versions, there's many companies, whatever. And as a company, the reason I would buy a WatchGuard is if it ever breaks, I don't have to work on it. Here's the real reason why I buy it. Why I would buy it. Because I'm thinking about my customers. I'm not thinking about me. I'm not thinking about my own personal morals. I'm not thinking about my own personal ethics. I'm not thinking about saving the planet. This is not Captain Planet and the Planeteers. Okay. I'm thinking about my customers' sanity, my customers' longevity, and my customers' happiness with me, even if they decide to leave me. If I have my own custom piece of hardware in there doing all the firewalling and all the NATing, and they hire a new company to come in after me, they're going to say, what in the hell was this guy doing? What in the hell is this? And they're not going to know anything about it. They're not going to know how to use it. They're not going to know how to control it. They're not going to know how to update it or anything. Where there's a WatchGuard router in there, they say, oh, it's a WatchGuard router. And even if they don't know what it is, they can just WatchGuard router, type it up, and they can say, oh, here's the company that sells it. They offer support. Here's the customer helpline number. Here's all, you know, and they have support. Or if they're competent at their job, they'll walk in and say, oh, it's a WatchGuard 3224. What's the username password? And then they'll know exactly how to work on it. So whenever, and this is my classic example of whenever somebody sells me to ask me, hey, Dor, what's the better this? What's the best that? I get incredibly upset inside. I don't let it show a lot, but I get incredibly upset because it is such an unfair and loaded question. If somebody asks me what's the best firewall router, hands down, pfSense.
Right.
Because I'm guessing they mean what's the best interface for me to use to learn about firewall routing or to have it in my house or this kind of thing. But if you're a tech selling your services to companies, you don't want to spend 10 hours custom building the hardware and the OS to meet your company's needs when you can just call up, get it drop shipped, already have the file configured and backed up, walk in, put it on the thing, log into the device, hit restore, bang, you have everything done for you. Then you just explain to your customer about what it is, how it works, what to happen if this light stops blinking, and walk the hell out. Cash money in the pocket. So I can't blame him for not using Linux because he felt like it was cost prohibitive, I think is the right word, cost prohibitive for him to use it. It wasn't that it didn't do its job. It wasn't that it didn't work. It wasn't that it wasn't cool. It wasn't that it wasn't free. It wasn't that it wasn't open source. It wasn't that he could use it. It was that it wasn't cost prohibitive. And everything in business is about maximizing profit so he can spend more time with his wife, so he can spend more time doing things that make him happy. Because and this is what I get argue with people at work all the time. Computers are supposed to do your job task so you don't have to. It's supposed to make your job easier, not more difficult. So, and if he thinks it's more difficult, I can't tell him he's wrong. Even if I do think he's wrong, I can't tell him he's wrong. I can just ask him questions. Well, did you try this? Well, did you try that? Are you sure you got to do this? Are you sure you got to use that? And that's all I can do. There is no right and wrong answer. There is no white and black answer. Everything is a shade of gray. And when he looked at that shade of gray, he saw black. When I look at that shade of gray, I see white. It's like the blue gold thing. You know, there's no right answer.
On the contrary, I think if he spent a little bit less time, and yes, this is advice nightwise, if you're listening to this, and anybody who knows him, feel free to pass it along, because it's going to be good life advice for him moving forward. If you'd spend a little bit less time rewatching episodes of The Next Generation, you could take that time, evenly distribute it throughout the year, into maybe using Linux again. Not full-blown, not the only OS on that one device you have, but I'm just saying,
I thought he was more of a Star Trek guy. I mean, Star Wars guy.
Trust me, he likes The Next Generation.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, who doesn't?
If you don't like The Next Generation, don't write in, because I don't like banning people from my.
Right.
Well,
I'll just
anyway. Well, but no.
I'll just say, go ahead. If if we had a world war and I wasn't sure if you were friendly or not, I would ask you, do you like the next generation? And if you say, what's that? I'll shoot you in the head. Yeah. Sorry.
Because I know that he's probably revisiting that catalog at least once a year. And if you take those hours nightwise and you just redistribute it somewhere else, I'm not telling you how to live your life, man. I'm just trying to help save you from abandoning this experience. And for that, you're welcome. And I say that with nothing but love in my heart. But yeah, I got to tell you, I was driving when I started listening to that episode. I literally had to pull over for a minute because I did listen to it on April Fool's Day. And I thought, wait, this cannot be an April Fool's joke because it was released like a week prior. But I literally stopped. I stopped my car. I thought, this can't be happening. And I listened to his justification for it. I was like, yeah, I get it. But man, I don't know. Maybe. Here, look, I'll say this. Nightwise, create a special account that can't be tracked and just type in the word blink twice if you're being paid off by a corporation that you can't necessarily speak to it. I'll send you the details for the correspondence. The proper correspondence method soon.
Listen, it cut me deep. I ain't gonna lie. It hurt. It cut me deep when he said that. And it also cut me when Joel McLaughlin on Tilt said he's using Adobe Premiere, I think it is, I don't know, to do video editing.
That wouldn't really bother me. Joel can do what he wants. But seriously, Nightwise isn't using Linux anymore.
Well, it's just, Listen, Adobe's Canadian, so I don't completely hate them anymore. But at the same token, Adobe is the worst set of proprietary lock-in. They are the lock-in tools masters.
Yes.
It's literally like Medusa. Mm-hmm. You look at the eyes for too long, and guess what? You're done.
But here's the thing. Okay? On Windows, you don't have the option of Final Cut Pro. You can use Sony Vegas. There's of course, Avid, which I mean costs ridiculous. I mean, you want to talk about lock-in? You know, yeah. I mean, there aren't that many options. Having said that, though, I will say that when I was in college, I did have the good fortune of having options as far as the software that I was doing video editing with. I mainly settled a little bit between it was a Final Cut Express and Final Cut Pro. Because, yeah, Adobe Premiere at the time, it got the job done. But I'll say, you know, like, yes, you can use Adobe Premiere to edit video. And yes, you can drive an 18-wheeler with chopsticks while using them to navigate the steering wheel. Either way, it's probably not the best way to get the job done.
Yeah. Sanity is number one. And that's the real reason why I'm disappointed. And I feel cut. Because I know, I'll say me. And I know I can get anything I've ever needed to accomplish on any operating system I have in front of me. I don't think I'm special, even though my mom called me special all the time. But nothing about it is difficult or hard. Here's the thing. I know those two guys do too. They feel a sense of excitement when they figure out how to do this stuff better than even the application or the OS was designed. What I think is the real thing is neither of them had the time to invest to figure it out. And let me tell you something. The one thing I know, I don't have enough of is time.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's where I then lean back on, I can't blame them. Am I hurt? Yes.
Yes.
Extremely. But, you know.
Logically, I understand it. I respect their decision. I mean, well, I'll just speak on behalf of Nightwise. I respect his decision. But still, it does hurt. It honestly felt like I lost a friend.
Yeah.
And I haven't sent him a message yet. I had really mixed emotions when I listened to the episode. And for those of you who may not have any idea, nightwise.com, Knight, KNIGHTWISE.com. Check it out. Well, actually, don't check it out until I sort out this Linux mess. I'm gonna draft him back onto a different team here. Maybe he just wasn't using the right distro. I don't know, but we'll figure it out. Yeah, I have yet to correspond with him directly since Hell of a guy, though. No, seriously, if you're not familiar, this is an excellent time to be turned on to another network, another great resource of content. I mean, back catalog is near a decade, if not, well, actually longer than that with some other stuff he's been involved with. But yeah, definitely go check out his stuff. Good, good stuff. But yeah, I'm going to make a point this week to go listen to the episode again, maybe take some notes, collect my thoughts. I'm going to get in touch with him. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, I'll say, the only way I can say it, it felt like I was watching the last episode of The Golden Girls.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? That's what it was like. It was like, you know, oh, man. But okay, here's the gimmick. Just like you said earlier, Cody, you installed that Linux for the first time and you were giddy. Oh, but the Wi-Fi didn't work and you know, this. Okay. Linux is extremely, obsessively, ridiculously far superior in so many things. In file structure, you know, file disk format, the types of wide area network disk formats you can have, kind of thing. The local disk formats. It's so much better on security. I mean, BSD is better. Me not stupid at all. But Linux is really good. On the customization you can do to it, it destroys Windows and Mac obsessively bad. Virtually everything is in clear text, which means all you really need is a text editor in order to hack any damn thing you want, including a printer driver. A web server, it's unbelievably more responsive, less resource hungry, much more secure, and just, you know, much more dynamic and works better. The database solutions on Linux are unbelievably better. I hate to say it, but you run Oracle on Linux and it purrs like a kitten. It is fan-frigging-tastic. Video editors are the example of it. They're just not as good. Why are they ain't as good? Because the developers aren't developing. There isn't more development on them, period. And one of the things that Nightwise learned is what I'm going to say. Here's another reason why I hate Adobe. PDF is supposed to be an open format. If you look it up, it says it's an open format. Everybody's lying to you about it. It's not an open format. The basic structure of the format is open, but every time you save a PDF document, there's a whole bunch of secret sauce going into that. The more complex the document is, the more likely if you try to open that document in anything other than an official Adobe endorsed product, the more likely it will not work, which is why also text-to-speech or accessibility options in PDFs suck. They don't work. Once that document hits a certain level of complexity, it does not work. Same exact thing for every Microsoft format that ever existed. Yes, technically, if I start a Word doc and I type three words in it and I hit save and then I open up LibreOffice and then I open it up and then I type something else and I hit save and then if I go back to Microsoft Word, yes, it's going to work fine. But every time you introduce any level of complexity into a Excel spreadsheet, a PowerPoint presentation, or a Word doc, you ever increasing the risk of it not working properly in the other application, period, bar none. There is no maybes, there is no ifs, there is no buts, there is no could-bes, there is maybe there should-bes, but that's why you will never have true cross-compatibility between any Office product and Microsoft Office. And that was the reason, that was one of the crux of the reasons why Nightwise had to leave Linux. Now, should he have left Linux? No. He should have installed Crossover Office and Microsoft Office. That's what he should have done, but he didn't talk to me about it. So he went away from Linux. But I digress.
Still felt like I lost a friend. I'm not gonna cry on this show. I promised myself before.
Travel down the road and back again.
Thank you for being a friend. Well, you, Dor, not Nightwise.
No, I'm there for you.
I know.
I'm your pal, and I like to think I'm your confidant. I don't have anything.
We
else
literally here. Can't go anywhere else tonight.
I don't know if we can
tonight. Dor, I would ask you where we can find you online, but seriously, if you've been listening to the show this long enough and you don't know, then that's your own fault. I'm just going to leave it at that. Dor to Dor Geek, the word two, not the number. Door was a pleasure this evening. As always, if you want to, I am Cody Cooper, aka Super Coop. If you want to send in an email, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want to correspond with us via voice, we totally have a phone number you can call. It's 707-6-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Please leave us a voicemail. Normally, I say try to keep it under 90 seconds, but we haven't gotten a voicemail in a while. So you know what? If you leave a 10-minute one, go ahead. Are we going to listen to it all or play it all? Probably not. Use your best judgment. Just please give us some correspondence. We'd love to hear from any one of you. You want to support the show, you want to support the network that is PodNuts, and you happen to shop on Amazon, please don't hesitate to use our affiliate links. That is podnuts.com/Amazon. You visit that site, you go straight to Amazon, view it as you would any other way, but we'll get a little kickback in the way of a tiny commission, and then put that money toward all sorts of equipment and services and products that we need to keep pumping these shows out for free, not ad supported. We'd appreciate it. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We do appreciate it. We're now into month 4 of 2017. I survived April Fool's Day. Did you have anything crazy going on this year on April Fool's Day, Dwarf? Did you get zinged by anything in particular?
I didn't get zinged by anything, but on Reddit. But while I was browsing Reddit, I saw what was maybe the best April Fool's joke of this year, and that was... If you directed your browser toward one of the adult video sites,
I heard this. Yeah,
it basically popped up and said successfully installed with a big thumbs up, and it said thank you very much. You are now automatically sharing every video you watch with every social media service that you are a part of.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fantastic.
Yes, yes. And then in a panic, people would click on it on this window that popped up. And then on the next screen, it said something effective. Oh, April Fool's, just kidding. But yeah. That one I did read was good. ThinkGeek.com, of course, is always great to to visit on April Fool's Day because they have those fake products they make up every year. This year, the best product I saw on there, the first runner up was a Where's Barb book, so like Where's Waldo, but it was Barb from Stranger Things. Very, very niche audience there. So if you get the joke, you do. If you don't, you don't. That's fine. But I would say the best item they had on there, a fake item, of course, not actually available, but it was called a swimming desk. It was literally a large acrylic above ground pool that had a computer desk at one end of it, so you could swim while you were getting your work done.
That is fantastic. That's pretty
neat. But the best April Fool's joke this year, which wasn't even really a joke, it actually happened. But if you're a Rick and Morty fan, it was going all over online all day. Hey, because first two seasons of Rick and Morty have been widely received. However, a little long in the tooth. We want season 3. We wanted season 3 for a long time. Now it's got delayed. It was announced on April Fool's Day. We will be airing the first episode of Rick and Morty Season 3 on AdultSwim.com for this many hours, just in a loop. And everybody thought, yeah, okay, whatever. Whatever, guys. We don't appreciate your shenanigans. This is not funny. We really want Season 3, except they really did air the first episode all day in sequence. But they did something else special, too, which I didn't understand for maybe the first 15 seconds or so that I was listening to it, but they had this weird audio playing during portions of the episode, which I didn't quite get, but then I understood what they did. They actually Rick rolled us in the way of playing the Rick Astley song, you know, Never Gonna Give You Up, but they did they cut audio from previous episodes from previous seasons to have different characters sing the song. I think they did that every couple minutes, which I thought was brilliant. And I remember standing up at my desk because I was at work on a break when I happened to stumble upon this and just applauding, thinking, this is these guys win April Fool's Day. This is great. This is great.
Right. Yeah. The only other one I remember, this is even more, I think, inside. Maybe it ain't more inside baseball. Maybe it's more outside baseball. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, a video went up saying, if you take these 4 things and you cook them, none of them were food, but if you took 4 of these things and cooked them, you could get a key and hop inside of a Guardian, which is a autonomous spider-like robot laser shooting creature that's really difficult to beat in the beginning. And the hoax was you could get in it and steer it around and shoot stuff. Completely fake. But it literally had me, huh, what? No. It at least, and that's the sign to me of a true good April Fool's thing. You're almost fooled. You know what I mean? Because if you really are fooled, then, you know, it just needs to happen for real, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, and that's what that one did to me. It made me stop and think for a couple of seconds. Could it be real? Could it be real?
Wow. Well, happy April Fools, everybody. We didn't do a joke this year. No joke episode. Yeah, we're not kidding. Nightwise really isn't using Linux anymore for the time being. But if I can say one thing, it's this: I'm on the case. Thank you for listening, everyone. Really do appreciate your support, and please do not forget the most important thing. Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Even Nightwise. Good night.